You are now listening to Halos in the Infield, an Angels baseball exclusive podcast. Hey, welcome into another episode of Halos in the Infield, the podcast with your host, Todd Fox, and the other co-host,
Fernando Mendez. Good evening, everybody.
And who's our special guest today?
We have David McKinnon of the Trash Pandas joining us. David, how you doing?
No, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Let's go ahead and get one thing out of the way right now. I mean, Trash Pandas has to be one of the most epic names in minor league baseball. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's like a nationwide thing now. A lot of people know the Trash Pandas logo. And people just buy, like, randomly will buy hats. And I don't know. People love it. So it's a good name. It definitely, I mean, they sold a lot of merchandise for sure, especially during COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of new era hats at the stadium and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah absolutely. I mean, it's like the perfect meme. You know what I mean? Like, it hit on all cylinders. I mean, I will say it was definitely a good name idea. So is that something you guys talk about, like, as like players? Like, dude, like, we're Trash Pandas.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, we don't talk about it too much, but I think it is funny how they get super creative with the names nowadays. Like, there's some crazy names. There's Sod Poodles is a good one. The Yard Goats. Yeah. Like, there's a bunch of good ones out there now. So I feel like it's more of a competition at this point. And I think we're winning. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It is funny.
Didn't Miami used to have the baby cakes?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too. I don't know where that one – that might have been AAA. I don't know. But, yeah,
I think it was AAA. I would know. On MLB The Show, I was always drafted by the Marlins. So I was always a baby cake. But, real quick. So you played in the Inland Empire in 2019. Were you a California Burrito at some point?
No, I got hurt. 19, I only played like a week and a half or 2 weeks. So I blew my knee out. So I pretty much didn't really play in 19 at all. So I was looking forward to being a burrito, but I did not get to be a burrito.
How'd you blow your knee out?
It was just someone made a bad throw to first. I was running to first, and the first baseman kind of cut in front of the base. I just tried to avoid the tag, and when I planted, my knee just – everything went. So ACL, MCL, meniscus, yeah. So, I mean, it still kind of gives me a hard time. I have a brace on it now, but nothing crazy. I'm fine. Yeah, I got full, like, everything, surgery, everything done. So had, like, a year recovery. And so COVID was kind of a blessing in disguise, and then – it was good until about halfway through the year, and then kind of started getting a little sore. I think it's probably just because I'm not used to playing every day like I was. Yeah. So
is it temperamental to the weather, like if it's hot or cold, or you have that kind of feeling with the some surgeries happen like that?
Nothing crazy. I think it's more for sure when it's cold out, but obviously it's not cold during the summer in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So I would say more just like during the winter and the off season. Like, I'm from Massachusetts, so if me and my wife are up there visiting family, like, it's definitely more sore there than it is when we're in Texas visiting her family.
Have you gotten to that point where you're 100% confident now of it? You're not like jittery?
I'm totally fine, like, doing everything I need to do baseball wise. I didn't have the brace on at the beginning of the year, and it just kind of swelled up a little bit. So I threw the brace on, and it hasn't given me any problems since. So right now I'm just using the brace, but I don't have any, like, second thoughts about any movements or running or cutting or anything. So, yeah, and I'm totally fine. It's just kind of inconvenient that I have to wear a brace right now, but it's all good.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. The mental aspect's always the biggest hurdle to get over finally with that injury.
Yeah, for sure.
Did that take a while for you to, you know, kind of not even think about it, not be like, you know, my knee's just going to give out right now?
Yeah, it probably took about – I mean, they say you're cleared to play in about 9 months, 9 to 12 months. And that's where I was cleared to play, about 9 months. But they said you won't feel 100% till like 18 months or so. And I'd say around the 16-month mark, I felt 100%, like, didn't think about running or cutting or anything. So that's kind of when I felt 100%, like, no pain or anything.
Nice.
So yeah, it definitely takes longer than like the surgeons tell you, like, oh, this is what it's going to be. But it usually takes longer because they don't really go through it. They just kind of cut you open and do the surgery.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, it's on an individual basis too, you know, so everyone is different.
Yeah, for sure. And every sport's different too. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously there's different ways to get a new ACL in there. So there's different surgeries that you can do. Some take less time to recover and others take a little longer. So we did the longer one and I think it definitely is stronger, but it definitely took a little longer to recover.
Okay. Well, good.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say, so a couple of like a more formal questions I had for you. So you say you're from the Boston area?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'm just going to take a wild guess and say Boston sports fan growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge Boston sports fan.
All the way around?
Patriots. Yeah. All the way around. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of all the sports, obviously, but like if I was going to root for any of the sports, it's all Boston. Biggest fan of the Patriots, that's for sure. It was pretty easy to be a fan of the Patriots growing up, though. So
yeah, with the whole Super Bowl runs and everything constantly.
Yeah.
But one thing we asked Packy Naughton, we had your former teammate on the other day.
Okay.
And we asked him because there's that, what's it called? That rumor that Boston Red Sox fans go to games to get some clam chowder. You ever go to you ever go to a Sox game to get some chowder?
No, I just went strictly for the baseball. Okay. That's all I went for. Gotcha. Yeah, no, I spent a lot of time at Fenway when I was younger with my dad. So yeah, we were there a lot. So obviously I'm a big fan of, I mean, growing up I was a big fan of the Red Sox, and my brother-in-law actually just got traded to the Red Sox. So I guess I can still be somewhat of a fan of the Red Sox, but fair not enough. As big as I was.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. You can still cheer for him.
Yes, exactly. I can cheer for him.
All right. So favorite player growing up, and did that player influence who you are as a player today in any capacity?
Oh, I'd say my favorite player growing up would have been Manny Ramirez. Hmm. Obviously Boston guy. So I spent a lot of time watching him, and it just seemed like he kind of went about his business in a more fun way. Like everyone thought he was having fun, not caring. It was like kind of lackadaisical, not caring, but he was always at the ballpark, like early getting his swings in. And I mean, as bad as he was at fielding, he still spent a lot of time at fielding. He just wasn't very good. but yeah, no, just him, I think, and just how smooth his swing was and how effortless everything was, but how hard he grinded like behind the scenes. So that's kind of why I liked him so much.
Okay. Is there any part of your game that you maybe molded after Manny, for instance, maybe like, you know, being loose out there, maybe having a little bit more fun, or maybe your swing, anything like that?
I wouldn't say my swing. I don't think my swing was God given. I think his swing is pretty like God given. He kind of just had his swing, it looked like, and obviously he just had to maintain it. So I feel like probably not bad. I just say more just having fun out there, because like it is a game, and it's hard to remember that's a game sometimes, especially competing all the time. And like it's fun when you're doing good, but it's not that fun when you're not doing good. So just trying to smile when you're doing well and when you're doing not so well, because it's just a long season. And if you're going to be miserable every time you're not playing well, it's going to be not a very fun season for you.
Now, do you play video games at all, like The Show or anything else like that?
The only video game I play is Fortnite. That's the only video game. Okay. Yep. I try to stay away from baseball when I'm not at the field.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, because some ball players, they say, man, I've hit the jackpot, or I've made it when I make it to a video game. I wonder if you ever get that feeling of like if seeing yourself on there instead of like, because like us, we create ourselves to be part of the game. But you'd actually be on the game, you know what I mean? You take that as like, oh my God, like I'm in the show, or
you know. Yeah, I mean, that would be cool for sure. But I would never pay for the show just because I'm on it. I mean, if I'm in the big leagues, I think it's a little different. But if I'm just in like AA, I'm not paying for the show yet.
Because me personally, if I'm like dating a girl or something, like, let me pop on this video game real quick. Oh, there I am, right there. You know. But yeah. So
yeah, you are on the video game, for the record.
Yeah, you are.
I am. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You are. I used to tease my uncle all the time, because my uncle played for the Redskins. and the Washington football team. But he was the worst rated player in Madden.
Oh, really? So what is my rating? I want to know that.
We have to look that up because the new ones.
Yeah,
show...
look it up and let me know when you see it. Okay. It can't be high right now. I gotta be on the rise a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know, man. I mean, don't shoot the messenger. You're like, you're in the 60s.
Hey, that's fine with me. I'm on there.
Exactly. I'm not on there.
What's cool about the show is they put the rosters from AAA and AA, and it used to be before they just make up names and put them on there, but they actually take the time to put all the players' names on there and their likenesses. So you could also, I mean, maybe I'll screenshot it and I'll try to send you a see if the face matches your face.
Yeah, that would be good actually. Yeah, let me see what I look like. Hopefully, I'm not ugly and a 60.
You're all get one of them right.
I know.
Yeah, like the thing with like a Madden game, I don't know if you ever played Madden growing up. I'm sure you did. Was like the fact that like how poorly like made the players' faces are. It's like Tom Brady. That does not look like Tom Brady.
Yeah, it probably doesn't look like me. I don't even know if they have. They don't even know if they know what I look like.
They have to. Google's a thing. Okay, so you went to. I don't want to butcher the high school's name. Oliver Ames High School. Did I say the
middle? Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's just a public school from Easton, same town I grew up in.
Okay, so you were a two-sport athlete, soccer and baseball, correct?
I played basketball in high school as well and stopped after sophomore year.
Okay, but you played soccer up to senior year along with baseball?
Yes, and I played soccer in college as well.
Oh, okay. So why did you decide to continue your career in baseball?
Well, I mean, it was kind of just I was going to play whatever sport I was best at in college. Baseball, I got the scholarship for originally, and then soccer had a really good senior year. So I decided to pursue that as well. I was like, yeah, I mean, got two times a chance, I guess, to play professional sports if I play two Division I sports in college. So even though I enjoyed baseball more, I still would have enjoyed playing soccer professionally more than I would have enjoyed like a desk job or something. So took that chance, and in probably sophomore year, I was kind of in between. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, whether it was baseball or soccer. Well, I mean, I knew I wanted to play baseball. I just didn't know if I was good enough to play baseball at the next level. I kind of raked during like the season, but we weren't really playing any crazy competition because it was Northeast baseball. And then I got to go to the Cape that summer ball, and I made the all-star team there. So that's when I kind of like realized, I was like, all right, I think I got something here. I know I can hit against some of the best pitching in the country at this point. So if some team takes a chance on me, it can develop me and like kind of make me into it, like give me some better mechanics and let me hit for a little more power. I think I got something. And fortunately, the Angels ended up taking a chance. But I always loved baseball more than soccer. Soccer was fun, but it was more of just fun for me.
Have you been on the West Coast since or at all to see the LA/Anaheim area?
Well, we went to – obviously, I played in San Bernardino in High A for that year, the end of the year from like May till the end of the year in 18 and the very beginning of the year for like week and a half, 2 weeks in 19. So yeah, I've been there. I've been to Angel Stadium. Okay. I hit live once in Angel Stadium. So that was pretty cool. And got to see like the clubhouse and everything. So that was awesome. But
what do you think about the overall vibe or your first impressions of the stadium and the vibe around the stadium?
Oh, the stadium looks awesome. And like I was in there earlier, so players were starting to come in later on in the day. They had an away game, I believe, at the Padres. So they showed up at the field and then they headed over to San Diego later. And yeah, I thought it was awesome. It was pretty cool. I mean, obviously that's kind of what you're aspiring to be and where you're aspiring to be. It's way nicer than the minor league clubhouses, and our clubhouse is pretty nice, but like there's like big league clubhouses are just next level, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously lower level clubhouses aren't as nice, but yeah, like ours is just AA is really nice, but it's not the same as a big league clubhouse. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're trying to get to. And it was just kind of a nice little taste of what, like, what could be eventually, you know?
Like a good little motivation.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and Toyota Field looks nice. I've never been inside the clubhouses at Inland Empire, but at Lake Elsinore, I had my fair share inside of those clubhouses, and that was a tough time there. At least that.
Oh yeah, my opinion. Ours. I mean, the away clubhouse is not nice. There's not much room.
Yeah, exactly. There's
nothing to do either. Yeah, it's brutal.
Hey man, you got to play some cards. Got to play some blackjack.
Yeah, exactly. That there's nothing to do. You just spend as little time as possible at those fields.
Yeah, absolutely. In high school, were you a first baseman as well?
No, I played shortstop. I think a lot of us played shortstop in high school though. I pitched as well. My freshman year, I made varsity freshman year. So I kind of, they only had one open position that year. I played outfield that summer or that fall or spring. Played center field and left field. And then sophomore year started in center. I thought I was going to be more of an outfielder anyway. And then our infield just wasn't good. So they moved me to shortstop. I'd always played like third base, shortstop, and like middle school and stuff. And probably honestly might have been better for my career, like for college wise, if I stayed at center field. But ended up at shortstop, and then when I got to college, I was third first couple of years, and then moved to first. And first, I think it kind of hurt me when it came to the draft my junior year, because they want first baseman. They don't care if you hit 220 as long as you hit homers.
Yep.
And my junior year, I hit like 395, but only had four homers. So they only see the four homers. They don't see the 395. Yeah. So that kind of hurt me, but other than that,
you couldn't be listed as anything else because, I mean, like you said, a first baseman like that, they're just not going to take a flyer on. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's kind of tough. I'm athletic enough to play multiple other positions, at that, like in college, and mm-hmm. They didn't really list. Yeah. I mean, they just saw me as, well, because I played majority of the games at first, that's just what they saw me as at that point. Honestly, that hurt.
I'm curious, what was your pitch speed when you did pitch off the mound? Did they clock you?
College wise or like in high school? High school, my junior year, I was up to 87, and then senior year, I was like 87 to 90-ish.
Okay.
I think the hardest I ever threw after my freshman year in college, I pitched a couple innings then. They had me doing both, and then my arm just was not feeling good. And I was a better hitter at that point. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I topped 90 then. But if I spent more time on it, obviously it could have got better, but my arm just couldn't handle it with playing soccer and then having to try to do baseball or hitting and pitching.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's good because, I mean, this way too, I mean, if they needed to move you to second, short, third, you got definitely.
Oh, yeah, velocity. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I couldn't do short for sure in pro ball. Like the dudes that play shortstop have absurd range yeah. in pro ball. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely, I mean, I played a game at second this year, and I've taken reps at third base, and I've taken reps in the outfield as well.
Okay.
But defensively, like if you want an average second baseman, an average third baseman, an average guy out in the corner outfield, like I could do that. Mm-hmm. But defensively, I think like I'm next level, like elite defender at first base, like saving errors for other guys and stuff. So I think that's why they like me so much at first. I could play other positions, but I would say I would help the infield a lot more when I'm at first than when I'm somewhere else.
You're robbing those doubles down the line, huh?
That it's more the picks and the footwork around the base, just saving errors. That's kind of what I do more of.
And then being on your toes too, real quick, that when the pitcher has to throw over there and they're trying to hold a runner on, man, you got to be sharp as a tack.
Yeah, and you don't know where pitchers are throwing it most of the time. They can be, it's crazy to me because they can throw the ball perfectly on a dot from 60 feet, but you don't know when they throw it over to you where that's going.
That ain't that the truth.
It is.
Absolutely. Tell me real quick about your experience at Hartford playing for the Hawks. Talk to me about the program, how you felt about it.
I mean, I very much enjoy playing there, soccer and baseball. Coaching staff was good. I coached Poitras and Coach Kulis for soccer and kind of developed a winning mentality there. I think we made it 3 out of 4 years for our soccer final. We never won, never moved on to the NCAA tournament, which kind of stunk. But we kind of faced some juggernauts. Like, they were top 10 overall seed in the country. So we'd run into them and then we'd lose. But so that was – it was fun. It was good. We traveled a decent amount. And then baseball, we kind of completely turned around that. I think the year before I got there, they had like 10 wins. Not saying it was all me, obviously, but I think our class was a big part of it. And the class in front of us was a big part of it. Sean Newcomb was there my freshman year. He's a pitcher for the, drafted
Atlanta Braves. But
yeah. Pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. Angels drafted him and the trade him to the Braves. So I think, like, that year kind of turned everything around. We broke the record for wins at the school at that point. And, yeah, I think my class has the most wins ever at Hartford for, like, a four-year time span. So, yeah, we definitely I had a great time at Hartford. We won a lot, both sports, and broke a lot of records. So it was fun.
That's cool.
Oh, you heard it here first. Retire his number.
Yeah. Did you ever get scouted, David, by MLS or anybody like that, like, or have an opportunity to work out for them as was soccer?
Never had an opportunity to work out, but I was getting looked at, like, my sophomore year. I had a good, really good freshman year, okay. Like, broke the record for shutouts in a season. And then sophomore year, they were just starting to look at me. But then after sophomore year, when I had played in the Cape and stuff, I didn't want to play soccer at that point, you know. It was more for fun, and I was more just – I'm trying to win a championship with soccer and enjoy the end of my career, but it was more – yeah, unless something happened baseball-wise where I'm like, nah, I'm not playing baseball. Like, it was just baseball after sophomore year. So I was getting looked at a little bit my freshman and sophomore year, but after that, no.
Okay.
All right, so you were drafted in the 32nd round in the 2017 draft.
Yes, sir.
So let's real quick talk about the draft day. Was draft day kind of what you'd expected? Was it as eventful as you thought? Or was it pretty much just, you know, oh, hey, you know, you got drafted and you're like, cool, you know, where do I go?
Yeah, it was more so my junior year, I was following it more. I got drafted senior year. My junior year, I was following it a lot more. And I thought, like, I hit 395. I was going to get drafted, like, regardless. Like, someone's going to take me. I was told by my, like, advisor, agent, person, somewhere between the 8th and, like, the 20th round, you'll probably get taken. Like, and I pretty much wasn't going to leave unless I got a certain, like, I had a full ride in school, so I wasn't going to leave unless I got, like, twice the amount of money for a full ride. So I'm not leaving unless you guys are, like, are going to pay me to leave. Like, other than that, I'm just going to stay and I'll start the year next year. So, I'll start my pro career next year, but it ended up not happening. No one wanted to take the chance. As a result of power numbers, and ended up going to the Cape that summer, played summer ball, actually met my wife now, that summer. So I think everything happens for a reason. Like, kind of God had that planned out, and I don't really regret it. It obviously would have been nice to have a signing bonus. That would have made life a lot easier.
Yeah.
But then next year I kind of didn't follow it at all. Didn't really care. Didn't really follow it. Just knew I was probably going to get drafted between 25 and 40. Like a late rounder, just typical late rounder. Hey, like, you can sign and you're going to have to ball out in order to stay. So had a good rookie season. And after that, they've started to give me a chance more and more. And they realize that I can pick it at first and definitely can swing it a little bit. So that's about it. So yeah,
you have some accolades though.
Yeah. Definitely have started to, I mean, that COVID year and the blowing my knee out, like, was low-key a blessing in disguise because I got to kind of revamp my whole swing and stuff. So that definitely helped.
Okay, good, good. What's some of the best advice you've had? Maybe it was talking to somebody in spring training, or maybe it was talking to, you know, somebody in your family or a friend that you really value their opinion. What's the best advice you've gotten within the last, you know, couple of years that have continued to shape you into who you are today as a player and as a person?
I think one of the best things that I've been told is it was our mental coach for the Angels, and he pretty much just said, just don't have any expectations. Like you put the work in, but like you got to just go out there and do what you do, and don't have any, like, don't expect to go 4 for 4. Don't expect to hit 4 balls hard every day. Like, if you expect all that, like, there's going to be disappointment in baseball. You can't just go out there and expecting certain things. Like, go out there and just have fun and trust yourself. And that was one of the big things this year that, I think I've done a pretty good job of, pretty much all year. I mean, last couple of weeks I've started to slump a little bit, and we're trying to work through that one, but I'm still trusting myself. I'm just not hitting as good, you know, like you can't hit 400 all year. So I hit like 400 in June and then hit like 250 in July. So kind of evened out, you know, but, for me, it's more just, I think I just got to trust myself. And like, I think more for me, I've also been told by my wife too, like I don't care what you do baseball wise. Like, it's more just how you act as a person, you know? So I'm constantly hearing that too. Like, how do you react when things aren't going your way? And how do you react when things are going your way? I'm like, are you the same person, or are you constantly changing based on what's going on around you? So that's kind of the biggest things that I've definitely learned since the pandemic and since like this new season has started.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, as I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, real quickly on the team, the Trash Pandas team, and including yourself,
yes,
when
sir.
You are having a tough day, if a starter, maybe you went over the scouting report before the game, and the starters maybe has a different approach, or he's not sticking to what you guys had planned to. Are you reaching for the tablet? Are you one of those guys that reaches for the tablet and tries to get more information, maybe adjust his, what do you call it, approach at the plate? Or do you just try to go up there with the same kind of approach and stay within yourself?
Yeah, for me, it's more I'm trying to trust myself. We get basic reports. It's nothing crazy like the big leaguers would get.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get like percentage they throw certain pitches in certain counts, and like how often they throw certain pitches overall, when they're ahead, when they're behind, like where they're throwing pitches most often, like where they're throwing their changeup, where they're throwing their fastball, all that stuff. But it's nothing like the big leaguers get a lot more in-depth stuff. But I'm more just, what pitches are you throwing most often? And as one of the better hitters, like contact hitters on our team, average wise and stuff, I know I'm probably going to get the least often thrown pitch. So say the guy only throws a couple changeups to righties, I might get the changeup, you know? So, just kind of knowing who you are as a hitter and knowing how they're trying to get you out. And just for me, I just try to trust my eyes, because I think that's probably my biggest tool, which kind of leads to the hit tool. So just trust your eyes, trust your timing, and just trust that you'll swing at good pitches and take the bad ones, you know? So nothing crazy. He's going to do what he's good at, and I'm going to try to do what I'm good at. Whoever wins then, whoever executes best is going
to
win.
Do they give you much leeway up there to maybe, if you see the pitcher's tendencies, if he's pitching away from you, to go to right field, you know, or swing away? Do they give you that option, or do they have a sign where you, okay, I got to pull the ball, or I got it, you know?
No, I mean, it's pretty much up to you. Like for me, I'm trying to hit the fastball to right field. I'm a righty, obviously. So I'm trying to hit the fastball to right field, and then I'll be more on time for that off speed pitch, whatever it is, change up, slider, curveball. So, I mean, if I'm a little bit early, I'll pull things. If I'm a little bit late, I'll hit it to right field. So I'm not trying to like hit it down the line or anything. I'm just trying to hit it into the gap somewhere.
Yeah, try to beat a shift if they have it on you, things like
that. Yeah, so like I'm not – if there's a shift, like I'm not – they don't shift me very often because I can hit the ball to right. Mm-hmm. So that definitely helps, especially in the big leagues, because they do shift a lot more in the big leagues. Right now, like in the minors, they're starting to do the whole like shift changes and all that. So
yeah.
For us, yeah, it's a little different now. But, yeah, no, I mean – you pretty much get a lot of leeway, especially with 3-0 counts. Like, we pretty much have the green light most of the time, unless the game's like out of hand or we need to see pitches. They want us to be ready for the big leagues. And a lot of times in the big leagues, sometimes the 3-0, 3-1 pitches, 2-0 pitches are going to be your best pitches to hit. So they don't really want you taking those, because the guys in the big leagues have some nasty stuff, and you can't be taking the pitches that you can hit.
Absolutely.
Last question I have for you.
Yeah.
So you, in an interview I heard, you called yourself a grinder. So yeah. As we previously stated, you're a 32nd round pick. Mm-hmm. Minor league baseball in general is hard. The diets, the lack of fair compensation, sometimes the unfair living conditions. What motivates David McKinnon every single day when he puts on his jersey to be the best player you can be? And what excites you about the next step?
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's always been my dream to be a big leaguer, you know. I grew up when I was younger trying to be a big leaguer, and I felt like everyone – like, that's always been my dream when I was in my small town in Massachusetts. And, like, that was my dream. And I would – like, people would ask me, like, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, we'd write our little, like, papers on that, and people would laugh and be like, oh, like, you can't do that. Like, they were telling me, like, you can't even be a Division I athlete from here. And I went and played two Division I sports, so – for me, it's more just like, number one's just proving people wrong that I'd always laughed at me, or that I'd always like doubted me, that I've always been trying to do that. But for me, it's more just like, that's the end goal. And I want to get there, and I don't want to just get there. I want to be there for a long time. I don't want to just get there and just sit there, you know, and be up there for a quick cup of coffee and then head back down. I want to be there for a while and actually help the Angels win, you know, or like, I don't know, hopefully it's the Angels, but whoever, you know, I just want to get there, you know?
Yeah.
And for like grow, I mean, for me at this point, like if I get there, compensation would be fantastic, obviously. But that's just been my dream the entire time to be there eventually. So, I mean, yes, I've always grinded. I feel like I've always been looked upon as like, oh, like, yeah, maybe like he's good, but at each level, I feel like I've excelled to the point where you need to, like, I've excelled at that level, and then you move up, and then I excel at the next level. And that's what my mom always said growing up. Like, these are just little stairs that you need to get to, like each level. Like high school, yeah, you were the best in high school, but then you got to get to Division I, then you're the best there, you got to get to the Cape. Then so it's always been just this kind of a stepping like ladders and a little just rungs on a ladder, and I need to just keep going up. So for me, it's always been kind of like the end goal has always been the big leagues, and not just to be a big leaguer, just to be up there for a long time. So we're obviously getting closer, but I still have AAA and the big leagues to get to. So hopefully we can get there.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully this upcoming season, next upcoming season, we can see you in Tempe, you know, you get a call up. That'd be nice to see you up there. And, you know, 'cause we'll be there in spring training, and hopefully you will be too. And I appreciate you saying about, you know, giving your examples about your mother, 'cause I think family plays a huge part in this whole thing. Fernando was bringing that out with the last interview that we did. The family, it takes a village to raise a child. And if you have a good family around you, and you're obviously a God-fearing man, if you get through everything and you get to the big leagues, I mean, as a grinder, you know, you have to work for your contract. We've seen some of these guys, but when they get paid, that's the true blessing. And I think you of all people will appreciate it when it comes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and a lot of them were bonus babies. They get paid and they were already bonus babies. Like, I've never had that before. Yeah, so yeah. It's like, it'd be totally different, you know, like $500,000 as the major league minimum sounds fantastic right now, you know, right now we're making like 10,000,
12,000. Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say 12,000 a year. Pre-tax.
Oh no, I'm married, so I make less than that.
There you go.
So, I mean, that's pretty much what it is for the normal person. It's about 12,000 if you're on minor league contracts. So yeah, it's definitely tough, you know, especially making ends meet. They've definitely done a better job of taking care of food stuff at the stadium here. here for sure. The Rocket City Trash Pandas definitely did a better job this year. So we appreciate that, that big time.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've heard food.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. I don't know.
But yeah, no, minor leagues in general, you know how it is. It's just tough. It's a tough, and like everyone's like, oh, you got to grind through it, but like, yeah, it's tough.
So, I mean, we're a relatively new show, but we've had Ty Buttrey on twice to talk about how hard life in the minors is. We've had Menazzanelli, who was a first round pick for the Padres, on to talk about life in the minors. And we've kind of taken it upon ourselves to make that a secondary mission on our show to let people know, like, hey, this isn't right. And I know there's a lot of minor league players who can't speak on that because of, you know, the situation they're in, and we would never ask that.
Yeah.
But we do is bring it to light. Right now we're selling t-shirts that say, I support minor league baseball players. And the goal is for us to donate that money to players who, you know, maybe need some money for food, because we understand how the per diem situation works.
Yeah, for
sure. So with, you know, everything that you guys are going through, though we've never lived through it, we just want you guys to know that we fully support everything you guys are doing. We understand the grind. Keep it going, man. I know it's not easy. I can only imagine what you guys go through. You know, obviously, we've all read the stories. We've heard that. We've had the interviews. We've talked to the people. And it's not cool. But, you know, we're really proud of what you guys are all doing. You know, you're living a dream that we'd all want, that we all want to live ourselves. But it's also not fair, the matter of which people have to live out that dream. So,
yeah, you know, it's definitely tough for sure. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, it's tough for sure. But I wouldn't, I mean, obviously you can change certain things, but I mean, for me, like, I'm grinding no matter what. So, I mean, I wouldn't change a thing. Obviously, I would very much enjoy it to be an easier road, but it's never been an easy road for me anyway. So we're just going to keep grinding until we get up there. And I think it'll just be even better when we're up to the big leagues.
Well, congratulations again from us about your marriage as well.
And thank you. Appreciate it.
And she's also a fellow grinder, because she's going through this process with you.
She's a big time grinder. Yeah, she's a big grinder too. So yeah, I think honestly, like we're grinders when it comes to the minor leagues, but like our wives and people who have like long girlfriends, like that, they have to grind pretty hard too, just because like you're either living out here all the time, and you're either, if you have kids, like you're taking care of the kids and we're gone all day.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, I mean, we're not there all the time, you know, so you're alone a lot. So I think like even more so than us, like we get to play a game at least every night where they have to watch us play, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My wife's a grinder big time, and all the wives out there are definitely grinders. So we appreciate them big time.
Absolutely. Well said.
Yeah, well, give her our regards. And one last time, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you being willing to do this on your off day.
Yeah, no problem.
Hopefully the rest of the day was good, and hopefully much success. And we hope to see you up here in Anaheim soon.
Yeah, I hope to be there soon too.
All right. Take care, David.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it.
No problem.
All right.
Well, that's going to do it out of us here at Halos in the Infield. Thank you guys so much for checking out the show. Todd, you want to go ahead and hit him with all the, you know, the yard work?
Yeah, like Fernando mentioned earlier, redbubble.com. And you could, by listening to this interview, if you appreciate that, check out the minor league shirts, because, again, those are pretty powerful, designed by our boy Randy, which sticks up for minor league baseball in general, and the discrepancies beyond compensation for these players, and the tough life that Fernando was describing. We hope to compensate them even in a little way. All proceeds go from the sale of those shirts or any kind of items, stickers, whatever, with that logo, go to minor league players.
And if there's one more thing I can add, stop stealing our logo. So it was stolen twice, taken down, and immediately stolen twice by two different people again. Yeah. So stop stealing the logo. Our boy Randy puts a lot of time and effort into those logos, and I can assure you guys that 100% of the money from Halos in the Infield on that merchandise is going to go to minor league players. We don't know if that's going to be this year or next year, but I promise it's going to go to them, because, you know, it depends on how much money we're going to be able to get in.
Yeah, we just started the campaign, so most likely it'll be next year, but we are going to set up a fund for it to be settled out. And also our merch for the page, which helps the page grow, the podcast grow, and it all goes back into giveaways for the fans. So check that out too. That's also on Redbubble. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We have a website, www.halosintheinfield.com. And for more, me and Fernando, along with Courtney, who's usually on the show, and there's also Chase and Andrew's show. You got the pregame show with James, the postgame with myself. There's all sorts of content on there and all on podcast form or on YouTube. So that's the bee's knees. Anything else, Fernando?
No. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks again to David. If you've got to tune into the interview, David, thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. Once again, regards to you, your wife, your family. Thank you again for the time. And thanks for being so open about everything, especially the minor league situation.
Absolutely. Great interview.